Okay, now a new farming group looks to form, but it claims without the influence of other farm organisations. Liam McLaughlin is a Donegal farmer. He joins us now. Liam, thanks very much for taking the call.
Hello, Greg. How's the farm?
Things are going good. Right, okay, why do we need another farming organisation? We do have quite a few.
Well, first off, Greg, it's not about another farming organisation. This is actually a meeting that's set up for farmers. And basically, it's a fact-finding mission from farmers, you know what I mean? And most farmers across the country and the feedback we're getting do not feel represented at the minute, neither by TDs or organisations or anything else, you know. We're basically seem to be hung out to dry at the moment. You see the more forestation coming our way. They're looking for 80% more forestry and re-wetting and maybe a reduction in the national suckler herd and things like that. You know, there's a lot of bad things coming our way, and a lot of farmers had concerns. I run a group there called Ireland's Farm Discussion Group. There's over 10,000 on it at the moment. And the idea was just put to the group, and basically the messages started coming in, and the feedback and the phone calls. So we decided to run with this meeting, but we didn't agree to a group or anything else. So we're just going to see what comes out of this meeting, and it seems to be great feedback at the moment. We're getting calls from all over the country, as far as Cork, Wexford, everywhere else in relation to it.
Now, I think IFA yesterday, exactly along the lines of what you were saying, were talking about the targets. They talked about an uprising, effectively, in rural Ireland. So they're taking a hard line on this. So they're the exact same issues that you identified. So is there a mistrust or a distrust with the IFA and their word with you and others then?
Listen, Greg, I'm not going to single out any groups or anything like that. We've got the problem in Ireland at the minute is we have too many groups, and we haven't enough support for any one of them to have any real impact, and we don't seem to have any groups working together. And we have a kind of a divide created at the moment among farmers, you know what I mean? So this idea now is basically no groups, bring the farmers into a room, everybody's a farmer, nobody's a member of this group, that group, that group, and we're hoping that farmers themselves can come together and come up with some new, fresh thinking, new ideas, you know what I mean? It's a new approach to it.
Yeah. But even though you don't call it an association, an organisation or a group, when you get a large amount of people into the same room and they come up with a series of bullet points, there comes a point in an organised way you have to progress that, you know, or else I presume you don't want to explain shop, Liam.
That is right. Well,
so where
listen,
does it go from
we're
here,
open to ideas, but I'll say one thing, Greg, and that is that if there is a suggestion of a group and we decide to put a group together, it'll be a military-run operation, and there will be no profiteering or anything like that out of it. There'll be no big salaries. If I was to suggest anything, I would suggest a non-profit organisation for farmers.
Yeah.
And basically, you know, there is possibilities. There's options. There's hundreds of options. Like, you can go onto the line of purchase groups. You can get savings on products. There's all sorts of possibilities, but basically, we're going to leave it to the farmers, and we're going to take whatever feedback we get from that room. And there's quite a group of us, like there's a lot of good people behind it and a lot of friends that I have down around south and all around the country. And we will then decide whether we go south with another meeting or come up north here with a meeting. And that is basically the plan.
Yeah, I've heard concerns from farmers. I chat to them on a regular basis, and everyone has different views. But one thing I hear quite often is that there is a sense that maybe the smaller farmer is being sacrificed here, that there might be a consolidation, that whatever farming that continues in this country might be done by a small group and to hell with the rest. Is that part of a problem that you see? Do you see that as a potential issue down the line as we see reform?
I think the small farmer is a kind of an easy target at the moment, but listen, there's things coming the small farmer's way. But if you're a large farmer, don't be thinking there's nothing coming your way, because there is. You know what I mean? Like, they're not going to, when they're targeting a small, low input farmer, like, you know what I mean? And the small farmer is doing very little pollutant, and then you have the larger farms, and I have nothing against larger farms, you know what I mean? Now, when they're targeting the likes of the average farm across Ireland, they're definitely going to target the larger farms later on, and they're going to be more easily targeted whenever there's less of them.
Yeah, and what's interesting about
the larger
this...
farmer needs to remember that the smaller farmer is supplying the stock to them. Like, you know, it's the small farmers around the country with 6, 8, 12 cows, things like that, are supplying the beef men with finishing stock. You know, and basically, we're a kind of a farmers is a kind of like a we're a gear and a machine. You know what I mean? Like, we're supplying stock on up to the larger, you know, to the larger farmers and the finishing units and things like that. Like, and one can't really work without the other, you know.
Yeah, and it's an interesting premise going into this meeting, because very clearly, and it's been put very nicely as well too, but it's pretty direct. We respectfully ask no input from current farming organisations or groups. So this is people with no affiliation.
Yeah, well, you see, and we have one organisation on there standing up preaching, or you know what I mean? Like, there's going to be people against them, and it causes unrest in the room. You know what I mean? Like, and we want this to be a calm kind of a meeting. You know what I mean? Like, and just to keep a good atmosphere in the thing. And we believe this is the only way to do it. Like, and listen, if you're a member of other organisations, you're welcome to come, but don't come preaching their policies to us. Like, you know, because this is all about farmers and just farmers dealing with farmers, you know, to see if there is anything can be come up with.
Yeah, but I also get the impression from you, Liam, that you just don't want this to be a talking shop, that from it you want to come up with proposals, solutions, ideas, whatever way you've mentioned some of them, bulk buying or even maybe, you know, protests or targeted protests or what have you. I mean, I presume it's all on the table.
As I say, I'm basically going myself into that room, and I have no plan. Yeah, but I intend to come out. I intend to come out either with a plan or no plan. And you know, we'll go down there, and we'll run the meeting as best we can. There's some very good people behind it, good speakers and everything else. And if this is a success, I'll come up the road happy enough, and we'll take the next step. And if it's not a success, I'll come up the road happy enough, and I'll say we have tried.
Yeah, but you won't be too interested in hearing people complaining then if they're members of other farming groups, if they seem happy enough or right with the way things are going. The meeting is in Athlone. It's in the Athlone Springs Hotel, Sunday the 19th of February at 2 p.m. All sectors are welcome. That's the message, is it? There's a contact number here which I can read out if people want to find a pen and paper.
Yeah, that's my own contact number,
Right, okay.
And, as I say, I'm just the person put out in front because we have a Facebook group there and there's 10,000 on it, and it was a kind of suggested that it was the ideal platform to get it out there, you know what I mean?
Reaches all different types of people, of course. All right. Okay, well, listen, we look forward to hearing what comes from the meeting, I think, because I think there's going to be people that are motivated to travel to Athlone are going to have their opinions, and they're going to have their concerns, and they're going to have their plans of action. So it'll be interesting, an interesting one to chair anyway, whoever has that role as well. All right,
Liam,
safe journey down, and we'll see what comes from it. Thanks for your time.
Listen, thanks very much, Greg.
All right, good luck to you. Liam McLaughlin there, who's a Donegal sheep farmer, and as I say, the few bulletin points here, a call for change is here. Farmers want their voices heard. We respectfully ask for no input from current farming organisations or groups. Let's stand together for change. Together we can make a change. The Facebook group, I think Liam mentioned, didn't he? 10,000 members already. It'll be interesting to see the turnout at the Athlone Springs Hotel on Sunday the 19th of February at 2 p.m. And they say it's organised by farmers for farmers. Last week's Ear to the Ground said how there were over 65,000 lambs imported from Northern Ireland and England. Farming groups the same as politicians. Not much use, they believe. That's what they said, not me. How do farmers feel with headlines today that large stores are announcing that they'll be selling less meat into the future? Well, that's it, isn't it? Right. Some warnings here, and I posted two on my Facebook page, and just to get it out there so people understand what's going on, and people are well intended. There's a lot of groups being accessed, and people are putting up fake posts of missing persons. And I have a serious problem with that, in that people are sharing them in goodwill, and then when the likes of me, who I would make sure I get proper sources for the information, put up a missing persons, they might be less inclined to share it, and that's a nightmare, because we all work together to get people home. Or dogs, you know, a dog has been found in Ballybuffet and there's a picture of a dog bleeding, and people share instantly. But what happens there is about a day or two later, the original person who posted the appeal, who's a scammer, They change that post. They edit the post so it's pushing a diet to a dodgy link where people are exploited for their money or Bitcoin or dodgy financial advice. So just be aware if you are, and I'm not preaching, I'm trying to help here. If you are in these buy and sell groups, it seems particularly, please double check it's actually a missing person or that, you know, there's a lot of giveaways in it if it's a real dog or not, or a cat or whatever it might be. Because when you share it, right, your friends trust you, and about a day or two later, or sometimes an hour or so later, that post is changed into a scam post, right? And it's on someone else's timeline from you. They trust you. They click the link. They lose money. There's a lot of scams going around. We had a contact from a listener here, and they say as follows, I don't know where to turn. I befriended a woman online, and after some time, she asked for money, which I gave her. It was to buy a plane ticket to come and see me. There was always a reason the flight wasn't booked, and then she would need more money. She would always provide me with the flight details into Dublin. On Thursday, I sent her money, and again on Friday, I sent her money. I've now sent her the best part of €10,000. Her flight's due in this morning, and now she sent me a message at 6 a.m. to say she wasn't coming to me. Again, we exchanged a few messages, ending with her saying to me, goodbye forever. I'm so hurt and I'm so upset. Now I feel totally ashamed that I've been scammed. Please don't feel that emotion. It's not your fault. At night, we had long conversation, exchanged photos. I just find it so hard to accept that I've been conned. I had genuine feelings for her. Is there any way I can recoup this money? I sent it all via MoneyGram. I have receipts for it. I'm devastated by it all. Now I just don't want it to happen to anyone else. Maybe she really is on this flight and is about to con someone else out of a lot of money. But she's not, I'm afraid, listener, she's not on the flight. And she's not a woman either, probably. There are factories effectively set up in far-flung countries and not so far-flung countries either, where teams of people pretend to be a man or a woman, and they do seek out lonely hearts to try and exploit them. They've got loads of pictures. They make sure they've got pictures to cover everything. So what are you doing today? Oh, I'm in the park. Oh, can I have a picture? Yeah, there's a picture of me in a park. You know what I mean? They know what's going on, and it's very easy to get conned by these people. So don't feel ashamed. Feel proud in that you're maybe stopping someone else falling for this. They they say all the right things. They know what to say. There's a textbook for it. And as I say, they make sure they've got pictures to cover every eventuality. So even if you start getting suspicious and want to catch them out, they have a picture to prove what they're saying is the truth. This person's lost €10,000. The money was extorted from them, of course, but they did send it willingly via MoneyGram. So I'm not sure what recourse they have in that regard. But just, that's a real person living in your area who's lost €10,000. And not only that too, which is really sad, they've a broken heart. They've a broken heart because they had real strong feelings for this person and were looking to see them. And the person doesn't exist. Probably a fella, could be anything, could be a woman pretending to be a fella, vice versa, who's to say. And unfortunately, around Valentine's Day, we see more of these. That's why I'm bringing it to your attention now, because, you know, there's a lot of couples stuff that's put up on social media, and people can feel extra lonely. And then they can feel, we're very simple as human beings, you know, we're not hard to work out or to kid. People can feel more vulnerable and at the moment, because they want someone in their lives. That was a gentleman there that was extorted, but 70% of romance fraud victims are women. Please don't share personal details online. Do not share or receive money online. Investment fraud linked to romance fraud is part of it as well. So there's loads and loads of case studies. If you've been a victim of that, share the details with us, and we can share it with others and make sure it may not happen to them. But to that listener, you'll not get the money back, I don't think, but please don't be ashamed. You followed your heart, but next time follow your head. Okay, pretty much anything can happen on the 9 till noon show. And today we've got a polar bear in studio with us. Where are they? There they are. Hello, polar bear. I don't think you can speak. I can't speak bear anyway. But it's great to have you in studio with us. Seamus Campbell with Special Olympics Ulsters with us as well. Good morning, Seamus.
Morning, Greg.
Does our guest Bear have a name?
This is Bear Chills, Greg. Yeah,
Bear Chills.
All the way down from the North Pole.
I see what you did there. Okay, right, we're inviting people to get freezing for a reason, because Special Olympics is hosting their annual Polar Plunge in Rathmullen this Saturday, the 18th of February at 3 p.m. Tell us all about it, Seamus.
Yeah, well, this is our sixth polar plunge in Rathmullen. Started back in 2015, and then obviously the pandemic put us on stall for a couple of years. So we run our polar plunge. It's our second biggest fundraiser in the year after our collection day in April. We have our polar plunge at about 10 different venues around the country. The polar plunge in Rathmullen has been the biggest and the best one in the country for a number of years, and we're hoping that this year we're going to get the people of Donegal out again and show their appreciation for all that's to do with Special Olympics.
Right, if you like bears, especially active bears, I suggest you get onto our Facebook page or our YouTube channel, and you'll see bear chills in all their glory. I wonder why it's always so well supported up here, Seamus. Well, I have a fair idea, but I want to hear it from you.
Yes, community, Greg. You know, the other polar plunges are fantastic as well. But just, you know what it was, when we went to Rathmullen way back in 2015, we were just embraced. They just wanted us to be a part of their calendar every year. You know, the way forward, the community group up in Rathmullen, they do so many brilliant things, and they say, you know, this just fits here, and please come and please stay. And we do every year. When we call our first meeting, they are just, everybody's on board, and just the whole community feel to all the people of Rathmullen, not only on the land but on the sea, all the people that we need on the sea as well. And they just there's a great gel there, and it just seems to work. And and the generosity of the people, you know, we get big business groups like from different companies come along, and with loads of staff and schools and big groups of people coming along, and the generosity is incredible. So,
and I was there for one of them. There's a great sense of fun. Isn't there? I mean, and a bit of competition there and a bit of crack, and you know what I mean? It's a really nice thing to be involved in.
Absolutely. And the last time around, we even had an initiative called Toss the Boss, where you could take along the manager of your factory or your school principal or whoever, and throw them in off the end of the pier. You know, and just to let people know, it's not the pier, it's a pontoon that pulls up along the side of the slip. So don't be worrying, it's very safe, you know. And it seems a much more natural thing to jump in off a pier and get out as quick as you can, that rather than running in of a beach, which seems quite very unnatural to me anyway, you know. So, and it's great, you know.
I don't think there's any good option in it, but people love it. And we have a huge population of sea swimmers, all year round sea swimmers as well. And sports people who after training will go in and cool the legs down. It happens all year round. So a lot of people are acclimatised already or accustomed to it. We'll talk about how the mechanisms of it in a moment, but I want to emphasise what people are supporting. It's Special Olympics Ireland. And what work does Special Olympics Ireland do?
Yeah, well, you know, Special Olympics is sports competition and training for people with learning disability, all around Ireland, all around the world. It's a worldwide organisation. We have in Donegal alone, we have 8 community clubs scattered all the way from Inishowen down to Ballyshannon and over to Killybegs, back around into Burtonport and everywhere in between. We have schools, Little Angel, Scullies again. We have day services, and you know, anywhere that people with learning disabilities want to join up their club, they in various different sports. This year, one of our guests on the day will be a very special Olympian, Vicky McGill from Letterkenny here. And Vicky is actually going to Germany in June to represent Ireland at the World Games in basketball. And she's a member of Northwest Special Olympics Club here in Letterkenny. And she is the only Donegal representative this year on Team Ireland. We have a smaller team going this year to a World Games, but back ever since the year two. Since the year 2000, we have had an athlete from Donegal take part in world and international games. So, you know, we have a great tradition of having athletes on Team Ireland, and we're looking forward to that. So it's about sport in the community for people with learning disability, and that's what people will be supporting, Greg.
8,000 athletes with intellectual disabilities across over 200 clubs all over Ireland are supported. A great work ongoing all of the time, and I think maybe the Olympics then is the sort of the pinnacle of that, but there's at all different levels there's activities ongoing. You mentioned one special guest. Who is your second?
Yeah, our second special guest is Katie McAteer, and Katie is a local to Rathmullen, and someone that Bear Child here knows very, very well. And Katie represented Donegal at the Rosa Tralee last year.
Excellently as well.
Yeah, and done so well, and she's just great. She just, like everybody in Rathmullen, she just gives everything. She throws herself in and gets stuck in. Mm. So Katie's going to be there on the day, along with Vicky, and there will be our special guests.
All right, and of course, Bear Chills will be there.
Bear Chills will be there. You better believe it. Yeah.
I wouldn't like Bear Chills to get wet, though, because the fur might take quite... Although, well used to the cold.
Yeah, anything can happen in Rathmullen, Greg.
You wouldn't know. Right, so it's Saturday the 18th of February at 3 p.m. Now, I think this is the type of thing that it's lovely to say you were involved in. Do you know what I mean? Like, if someone says, what did you do Saturday? Oh, we did the plunge for Special Olympics. You know, I think it's a lovely string to the bow to have and to bring the family up as well. Registration costs €15. Plungers are encouraged to raise an additional €25. So in other words, come up with a total of 50. You pay the 15, few of your relations, at least another 25. And people will do far more than that. But look, I know people I would happily pay a tenner to see them go through this. Right? That's
absolutely
part of the motivation, isn't it? Bear's Chills would probably pay twice that if they could find their wallet. Plungers who raise an additional €25, so it would be a top 50 total, receive a complimentary Polar Plunge T-shirt. So no one can ever deny that they ever took the plunge because of the T-shirt to prove it. Isn't that right, Seamus?
That's for sure. And you know, just what you mentioned as well, is if somebody had to go and do a jump in on their own, you know, it's not half as much fun as taking somebody along with you, because you encourage each other and you prompt and you egg your mate on, and it, sometimes it does take that wee bit of a push for it to
but
be alongside somebody.
Half the track is the person that doesn't really want to do it.
Absolutely, there's where you are.
It's like karaoke. I'm not interested in seeing someone who can sing. I want to see someone murder a song. Do you know what I mean? It's the same with this. I don't want someone who, I'll get more fun watching someone who doesn't want to go into it.
That's for sure.
There's all different types. All right. So people just turn up on the dates at 3 p.m. and is there registration on the...
Yeah, registration. You can register online on the www.specialolympics.com/polarplungerathmullen, or you can... What a lot of people do is they rock up on the day and they register. But, you know, to help us, if you can register beforehand, it'll give us an idea how many are coming along, and that would be great. One of the big things this year, and we've had it now for a few plunges, we've been in contact with the Irish Navy, and the Irish Navy are bringing one of their Navy vessels, the L.E. George Bernard Shaw, the same vessel was in 2019, and they will be opening it up to the public, so it will be at the end of
brilliant
the pier.
Brilliant for young ones as well. Not just
to bring
young
the
ones,
kids.
But it's such a buzz for
it's
them.
It's brilliant. We did the tour.
Even just going up the gangplank, is it?
Yeah.
Even up the walkway, it's a special thing.
And they'll be opening up for tours of the vessel from 1 to 5, and you know, we're so thankful to the Army and to the Navy, and for the Navy to come in, and this is a date in their calendar every year as well, you know, so we're so thankful to all those different groups. So if anybody wants, locally to be able to get on board a Navy vessel and be shown around, it's a huge opportunity.
Okay, so that is the Special Olympics Polar Plunge. It's the annual Polar Plunge. It's in Rathmullen this Saturday, the 18th of February at 3 p.m. It's going to be lots and lots of fun. You're going to be freezing for a reason. And I think nowadays too, lots of people have these, because we love pier jumping and stuff, have these warmers that you can stick on straight away afterwards. Lots of people have them now. As I say, lots of good fun. I'm sure there'll be hot drinks around the place as well. Registration, just €15. If you can, because it helps with numbers, and maybe they can relax a bit as well. Register in advance. Give us the URL again there, Seamus.
Yeah, so www.specialolympics.com/polarplungerathmullen.
And we'll link that on our social media as well. Registration is €15. You're encouraged to get sponsorship to raise an additional €25, or whatever you can beyond that would be fantastic. And if you hit that €25 mark, you get a complimentary Polar Plunge T-shirt. But most importantly, you're supporting Special Olympics Ireland, which provides sporting opportunities for nearly 8,000 athletes with intellectual disabilities across over 200 clubs all over Ireland. And you can do no better for your community than to support this event, I think. And weather's not an excuse, really, you know.
Yeah.
Water's pretty chilly.
Yeah,
although it's not quite as chilly this time of year as it might be at other times.
Yeah, although funny, we've been told that the waters are colder in February than they are in December. We were meant to go in December, Greg, but then with Chrysler and all that happened, we said, you know
what,
we'll push it back.
Yeah.
And so, but the water is colder in February, but it'll be all right.
So you're going to be extra freezing for a reason.
Absolutely. Thank you so much.
All right. Bear Chills, thank you. You've done fantastic there. Not quite sure what you were trying to say, but I think most of it was, would you speed up, Seamus? It's wild warm in here. Because, of course, polar bears would be more used to colder climates. It's quite warm in here, Seamus. I feel like dragging this out just to say how long bear.
I think bear is sweating for a reason.
That'll be €15, please. Right, okay. Noel Cuniff is CEO of Wind Energy Ireland. Good morning to you. Thanks for joining us.
Good morning, Greg. Thanks very much for having me.
It's good to have you on the show. Right, I'm just going to get the one thing out of the way early on for my own knowledge here, because the opening line here is more wind farms could mean lower energy bills. Now, I was under the impression that the kilowatt rate for wind energy was guaranteed at a much higher rate than it costs to generate it. So how would more wind farms, when there is a locked-in price received for a kilowatt of wind energy, how could more wind farms mean lower energy bills?
Sure. So it goes to how the electricity market works in Ireland. So how it works is there's a wholesale market where the people that produce energy, be it wind farms or gas generators or coal generators, they sell their power into a wholesale market. And then that's bought by the suppliers, the likes of Electric Ireland or Energy or Airtricity, who then sell it to consumers around Ireland. What wind energy does is by having wind there, it pushes the most expensive fossil fuel off the system. So it pushes the coal generators, it pushes the most expensive gas off the system, and it brings down that wholesale price, which then feeds into the electricity bills. To give you an example, in December, during the days when we had the most wind energy on the system, the average price was around €192 in the wholesale market. But on the days when we had the least amount of wind energy, the average price was about €326.
Yeah.
So you're looking
at these energy companies,
and
we'll get to the positives, Noel. This is not going to be sort of a gotcha on this. That's not my motivation,
sure.
But I want us all to understand it. That being said, we're seeing electricity prices, wholesale electricity prices, lower than they were before even the invasion in Ukraine. Yet we're being told by energy providers that they've hedged and they've bought in advance, and there's a myriad of reasons that it might be 18 months before the consumer sees any reduction. So when we see an industry treat us like that, it's very hard then to sort of take the positivity that you're trying to give, because it doesn't seem to chime with our reality. Do you get me, Noel? As I say, I'm only just trying to express the feelings that are out there. I'm not having a go at you or the sector, because I know there's a lot of bad press out there and you have to try and counteract that. But I'm just, my listeners, that's what they're going to be feeling here. This fella's talking nonsense because we're not looking at any reductions in our electricity for a long time to come.
And I can completely appreciate that, because homes and businesses have been challenged around the country over the last 12 months. And that change that we've seen in our electricity prices is because of our reliance on imported fossil fuels. Ireland spends about €1 million an hour on imported fossil fuels, to give you an idea of the scale that we're talking about here. In terms of the lag time that you've spoken about, that is true. We saw prices climb from probably about October 2021, prior to the war in the Ukraine, in terms of international gas prices, that started to increase months in advance of that happening. And then there was a lag time in terms of how that then hit people's bills. So there was a lag time on the way up, but unfortunately, there's a lag time on the way back, just purely because of the power that we're paying for today was actually bought months ago.
Yeah, because you talk about the savings in December. I think it was €2 billion, was it, in a month or over?
It's,
right, but
so
that €2 billion goes into record profits for these companies. You know, if they could find a way to sort of say, right, we've saved some money here, you know, we can discount your power, give us a little bit of hope, maybe stop people struggling to pay their bills, it might be easier for you then to sort of relate your message. If the if it felt fairer, you know, because I know you talked about the slight lag in prices going up, but they went up an awful lot quicker than they're going to come down. And there's just a distrust of the whole, Now, it's probably unfair in a lot of areas, Noel, but that distrust is there, and something drastically, I mean, even here, the government talking about windfall taxes, they recognise what's going on.
And I think that trust is something that the electricity supply companies are going to have to build up with consumers over the next few months and explain maybe why that lag time is happening. The 2 billion euro that you referred to, Greg, just to put that into context, that 2 billion euro was actually the saving that Irish consumers made last year over the course of the entire year because we had wind energy. So the way to think about that is if we didn't have wind energy in Ireland, we would have had to pay an extra 2 billion euro on gas to produce power and to pay for carbon credits. So I would buy that
if I trusted the power companies, but I don't. So that message is lost a little bit on me. But I understand it, and you've had an opportunity to say it. Now, we are in it is really quite remarkable when you look at it. Now, it can go up and down and up and down, but, you know, there is a remarkable amount of our energy that is generated through wind.
Yes. So last year, 34% of Ireland's electricity came from wind energy. So one time in three, when people used their ovens, their TVs, their laptops last year, it was because of wind power. So we're one of the best performing countries on the entire planet when it comes to onshore wind energy contributing to our electricity demand. And as I mentioned, that helps to push down the wholesale prices, and bills would be even worse if we did not have that wind energy, is the way to think about it. The goal that we have now as a country is to try and get from a third of our electricity being renewable today to 80% of our electricity being renewable by 2030. So that means that we're going to need to roll out some more onshore wind farms. We're going to need to start solar generation. It's something that we haven't done historically in Ireland, and we've been one of the slowest countries in Europe in that respect. We've also been one of the slowest countries when it comes to offshore wind energy. So that's a huge economic opportunity for Ireland that other countries with coastlines around Europe have really taken advantage of in the last decade. And we're only coming to the market now with our first offshore wind farms, one off the West Coast, five off the East Coast, that will be going in for planning permission this year.
Now, new research shows 4 out of 5 people here support wind farms. But again, that is, it's a factual situation, but doesn't tell the full story. Because, of course, if you are in the centre of Letterkenny or Dublin or Cork or Kerry, or if you're in a valley, you know, you might go, yeah, wow, OK, it's cheaper electricity, bring on the wind farms. But I would imagine then the people that are opposed to these are those that feel they have to live around them. And I would say in Donegal, because we've got an awful lot of wind farms here, it might not be 4 out of 5. So would you recognise the fact that certainly in counties like Donegal, that maybe we've reached our limit in terms of onshore wind generation? And we need to look elsewhere for that, and then maybe focus more on solar and offshore?
So Donegal's been an incredible success story for onshore wind energy. I think as a county, there's a lot to be proud of in terms of not just powering your own county, but powering much of Ireland over the last 10, 20 years. Some of the earliest wind farms were built in Donegal in the 1990s and early 2000s. I think when it comes to the future for Donegal, there will likely be more onshore wind farms, but certainly there's going to be offshore wind farms and solar, both on the West Coast and in other parts of the country as well. When it comes to trying to tackle the problem that we have here, which is a combined issue of climate change and trying to decarbonize the country and trying to become energy independent to wean ourselves off those imported fossil fuels that are driving the climate crisis, we really need to throw everything at it. So we need more onshore wind energy, we need more solar energy, and particularly we need offshore wind energy as well. So we can't do it without a combination of everything. In terms of the poll that you referenced, on a national level, 4 out of 5 people are supportive of wind energy. And then again, on a national level, only 1 in 20 are opposed to it. When it gets down to that rural area, when the question is asked, would you like to have a wind farm beside your home? 3 in 5 people are supportive of it, and it's still just 1 in 10 that are opposed. So generally speaking, people are in favour of wind energy because, as you mentioned, people recognise that it is saving Ireland money in a time of a cost of living crisis.
Yeah, of course, and it's a good time to ask that question. But as I say, here in Donegal as well, you know, if we're going it from an environmental point of view, We're seeing bogs being torn up for wind farms. You know, an awful lot of the wind farms here are built on peat, so we're pouring concrete in there. Do you know what I mean? Whatever we do going forward, we have to make sure we do it right, because people are astute now. They know what's what, and you can talk about how much it costs to create a kilowatt, but you also have to explain the environmental impact of putting them up in the first place. And I think that's perhaps maybe where messaging could have been improved over the decades, and we might be in a different space now.
Agreed. I think it's something that we've worked a lot on in the last few years. It's something that we need to continue getting better at, is talking to people and communicating much earlier in a project's life cycle, and trying to get the input from communities in the areas, because nobody knows the area as well as the people that are living in it. And there's a lot of information that people can provide to try and change how wind energy should be developed. It would be very unusual nowadays for a project to start its life, engage with communities, and for things not to change. So turbines to be dropped, the size of turbines to be changed, or the location of turbines to be moved. That's happening right across the country in many sites now. So completely agree with you. We need to continue to get better at how we go about developing wind energy, how we communicate with communities, and particularly how we bring the kind of combined problems of biodiversity and energy crisis, climate crisis together.
People in this part of the world have fought tooth and nail through the planning system to register objections. You say things are improving. We hope that's the case. But then when people hear that you guys are calling for maybe, you know, planning to be streamlined or changed, your alarm bells are going to start ringing. But that being said, there are major projects, and we talked about one last week, that get caught up in the planning process, and they're effectively, you know, frozen. They don't go anywhere. So what is Wind Energy Ireland calling for in terms of planning processes for wind farms, and does it apply offshore and onshore?
It would. And just to be very clear, we're not talking about limiting people's opportunities to try and provide objections to projects. Everyone has that right. What we're really calling for is the speed of the overall process to be sped up one way or the other in terms of the decision. So there is a statutory time frame at the moment to make a decision on a renewable energy project, a wind energy project, a solar farm, of 18 weeks. And in reality, the decision timelines on average are taking closer to 18 months. So that's a long length of time of complete uncertainty, both for the communities and the local area, but also for the developers. And if we can streamline that process, resource up the important planning bodies like On Bord Pleanála, like the National Parks and Wildlife Service, who engage on the environmental aspect of things, if they have the right people and the right expertise, then we can get through these projects in terms of their applications much faster. We're not saying that the decision should be more yes. We're saying that the decision should be faster one way or the other, so that people have certainty, and then we can move on with developing a project or move on with looking at other projects in other areas if they're not going to work out.
Of course, says Greg, ask that man what they used to de-ice these wind farms. I think they might be referencing some images that were circulating from a Nordic country, maybe Sweden, helicopters spraying blades. I don't know what they were spraying them with. I don't think we need to do that here. I'm not sure that's happening here. I can't imagine it's happening here. And that's not to I'm not an apologist for the industry, but I just don't think it's happening here. Secondly, it seems a lot of companies are not ditching it, but they're saying, right, now we need to rely on fossil fuels. Other countries, you know what I mean? We're seeing China, Germany, other places sort of go, right, and even here, we need to keep the coal fires burning. Why is that happening? Because people will look at that and go that it's right. People are starting to catch on now that this wind energy is not all it's cracked up to be. How do you counter that?
No, I don't think that's what's happening.
That's like, the
I think
perception,
Germany's situation is that they were incredibly reliant on imported gas.
Almost 100% reliant on imported gas.
Exactly, and they've had to really adapt very fast. So they're looking at other ways that they can get their energy. For Ireland, we were also exposed to Russian gas, particularly when it comes to the price. So that's, again, what caused the cost of living crisis. It caused the spike in energy bills. Ireland has an incredible opportunity here. We have one of the best wind resources on the planet. A lot of people don't realize this, but when you look at offshore wind energy, we are one of the largest countries in Europe when you take into account the sea area that we have. the sea area for Ireland is about 7 times the size of our land area. So I often say that we've one of the largest areas in Europe, but 7/8 of it is underwater, unfortunately. But the good news on that side is that we can also get a huge amount of power from the ocean. And that power can help to not just make us energy independent, allow us to set our own prices for electricity, decarbonize the grid, but then it opens up an opportunity to become an exporter to Europe as well. We can actually, instead of becoming being so reliant on fossil fuel imports, which we are at the moment paying €1 million an hour for fossil fuel imports,
we don't have time to
actually sell that energy.
Exactly. We don't have time to get into it now, but I also know there are fishers who have seen the plans for where these offshore wind turbines might go, and they are in and around current fishing grounds, and they have their concerns. We've teased that out in the past. We don't have time to do that now. Noel, I hope you feel you got a fair crack of the whip. We appreciate your time this morning. Take care of yourself. Noel Kniff, CEO of Wind Energy Ireland.